So Rinpoche wishes everybody good evening.
So Rinpoche asks everyone to begin with engendering the awakening mind bodhicitta for the sake of all sentient beings in number vast as space. One engenders the awakening mind, resolving to strive with respect to the Dharma in terms of listening to teachings, reflect upon the meaning, and taking up the ensuing understanding in the practice of meditation. And this one does then, for the sake of all sentient beings in number vast as space, to establish all these sentient
beings.
So it's very important to have an understanding of what is to be attained, that is Buddhahood, what Buddhahood is. It's then also very important to have an understanding of the reasons for it being possible to attain Buddhahood. So one has to have an understanding of what is to be attained, namely Buddhahood or becoming a Buddha, what a Buddha is. Generally speaking, a Buddha has innumerable and inconceivable qualities. These can all be summed up by two qualities, namely having perfected love and compassion for beings and wisdom realizing selflessness. So, in brief, one has to accomplish Buddhahood or become a Buddha that has perfected love and compassion for beings and wisdom realizing selflessness. This is what one should strive for. The reason for why all beings are able to attain Buddhahood or accomplish Buddhahood, become Buddhas, is that they are pervaded by what is called the Tathagata Garbha, the basic element. So It has been recorded in the sutras that the Buddha himself said that all sentient beings are pervaded by the Tathagata Garbha. So this means that it's not the case that the Tathagata Garbha or the Buddha nature pervades superior beings and not inferior beings. The Tathagata Garbha is present within all sentient beings, regardless of their status, whether superior or inferior. Since all beings are endowed with the Tathagata Garbha, the Buddha nature, all beings are able to progressively or gradually achieve Buddhahood. There is a text that explains the Tathagata Garbha, the Buddha nature. It's called the Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. In English, it has been translated into the changeless nature. In that text, the Buddha nature or the Tathagata Garbha is explained extensively in detail. The fact that the Buddha nature pervades all sentient beings is established in this text through three reasons. One, the text then proceeds to give 10 points by means of which one is enabled to gain certainty of the Buddha nature and what it is. Then that is followed by 9 analogies that explain the way in which the Buddha nature is present within beings, the way in which, though being present, it's not manifest, that is to say that it's covered or obscured by adventitious stains. So those that are interested in acquiring an extensive knowledge of this subject, the Buddha nature, should slowly try to study this text that Rinpoche has mentioned. So many commentaries have been written on this text, the changeless nature. Within the Kagyu tradition, there is one which is usually studied, written by Jamgon Kongtrul the
First.
There is also another commentary written by Asanga, which is used by the different schools of Tibetan Buddhism. As you probably know, Rinpoche is establishing an institute for translating texts, and a group of people will slowly translate these two mentioned commentaries into English. So, for the time being, the root text only has been translated. The root text itself is not very comprehensible. It needs a commentary. So, Rinpoche hopes that slowly the group of people that are able to translate texts at the present will translate the two commentaries mentioned, and then it will be very easy to study this subject.
The reason for translating these texts slowly, or generally translating slowly, is that if one does it too quickly, it might not turn out that well. So, in brief, the Buddha nature is or amounts to the true nature of mind. The true nature of mind has two aspects. There is the essence and its nature. In essence, mind is empty. Its nature is clarity. These two are inseparable. So the Buddha nature is, in fact, this inseparability of clarity and emptiness. So there is this inseparability of clarity and emptiness, the true nature of mind. With respect to its essence or nature, there are no stains. Essentially, there are no stains whatsoever. So the stains one speaks of are only accidental or adventitious. So, as was said, there is the true nature of mind being the inseparability of clarity and emptiness. Essentially, it is not polluted by any stains. One then speaks of the perfectly pure Buddha nature or the perfectly pure Dharmakaya. And when one speaks of the perfectly pure Dharmakaya or Buddha, then that is what it refers to, namely that the true nature of mind essentially, or from the viewpoint of its essence, is not polluted by any stains. In the Mahayana, the greater vehicle, and in particular in the Vajrayana, there are teachings speaking of the primordial Buddha. And this primordial Buddha is what is referred to when one speaks of the true nature of mind that is primordially pure, that essentially is not polluted by any stains. So, as was said, from the viewpoint of the essence of mind, there are no stains. That is then Buddha, Buddhahood, Dharmakaya, all these terms refers to that aspect. Then there is the situation in which mind is obscured by adventitious stains, and at that point that being or individual is not a Buddha. His or her Buddha nature at that point is obscured or covered by these adventitious stains. So, in order to be able to accomplish Buddhahood, one needs to purify mind of these adventitious stains. One may then wonder whether these adventitious stains have any inherent existence or not, whether they are real or not. The answer to that question is that these stains
have no independent existence. They have no true existence. They are not real and solid. If these stains were real and solid, it would be very difficult to purify mind of them. It is for the reason that these stains have no inherent existence that we are able to purify mind of them if we apply ourselves to skillful means or skillful methods. So when one speaks of adventitious stains, one refers to something which it is possible to remove or purify mind of. So, examples or analogies have been given in order to describe the way in which mind is obscured by these stains, the way in which the nature of mind is covered by these adventitious stains. So, mainly there are three examples or analogies given. One speaks of them being as clouds in the sky, as muddy water, or stained gold, tarnished gold. So if one has tarnished gold, the stains then that tarnish covers the gold can easily be removed if one polishes the gold, since they are not a part of the nature of the gold, they are not a part of the essence of the gold. So for that reason they can be removed easily. So the essential point with respect to being able to easily purify mind of these adventitious stains is an understanding of that they lack inherent existence. So, with respect to developing an understanding of that phenomena have no inherent existence, there are two aspects. One has concepts, and then there are the objects of these concepts. If one first understands or realizes that the objects of one's concepts have no inherent existence, then it's quite easy to realize and understand that the concepts themselves have no inherent existence either. There is, on the other hand, another method in this respect. One could also start out realizing that concepts have no reality, which would result in an understanding of that their objects have no reality either. So there are two ways of approaching this. Rinpoche gives the example of a dream. If one dreams of, for example, a tiger, a leopard, or a poisonous snake, if one at that point recognizes that one is only dreaming, then at that point one will know that the object that induces fear within one's mind has no reality, and as a result of that, one will come to an understanding of, or at that point one will realize that the concept that grasps these dream objects as well has no reality. It also works the other way around. One may first understand that the concept that grasps a specific object has no reality, since one is only dreaming, which results in an understanding of that the object grasped has no reality either. So in fact, there are two ways. One may start out realizing that the grasped object has no reality, which results in an understanding of that the subject, the grasping subject, has no reality either. Or one may first realize that the grasping subject has no reality, which results in an understanding or realization of that the grasped object has no reality either.
Tina, tsam kap kap so sirju yor denbar mado pe denru denbar mado pe jumsin la samuta tsam tene nang nam do sen denbar mado pe jumsin la samuta.
So at times one should reflect upon that external objects have no reality or independent existence, and at other times one should reflect upon that the inner mind, the conceptual mind as well, has no reality. So, as Rinpoche mentioned before, if one has an understanding of that phenomena have no reality or inherent existence, then it's very easy to purify mind of concepts. He gives the following example to illustrate this. If one, while dreaming, doesn't recognize that one is dreaming, one will have great difficulties in transforming or changing what is dreamt of. One has in fact no capacity at that point to transform one's dreams or to change them. Whereas if one during the dream recognizes that this is only a dream, at that point one is capable of transforming whatever is dreamt of into whatever one desires to transform it into. So the first is then an example of it being very difficult to purify the conceptual mind if one conceives of concepts and so forth as real and solid, whereas if one has an understanding of that there is no independent existence or inherent existence, then at that point it's very easy to purify the conceptual mind.
Denbar madhupa yapuji kiba yina, tini ngātri tādhar ki deva tsorva dunga ji tsorva tazutam ki, tini lela wa jyotu.
So, the latter, namely being able to recognize dreams for what they are, is an example of that it's easy to purify mind of adventitious stains if one understands that these have no true existence. If there is such an understanding or such realization, at that point it's very easy to change or transform states of mind such as sorrow, happiness, and so forth.
dunga rang ngo denbar madob ya bu ji china tene dunga te jo le la jo to le.
With respect to suffering, if one understands and realizes that the causes and conditions that brought about that suffering have no inherent existence, as well as that the suffering itself has no inherent existence, at that point it's very easy to transform or change that state of mind. Then, if one speaks of happiness or a happy frame of mind, then generally speaking, one wouldn't want to change that state of mind particularly. But one tends to develop attachment to such a state of mind, which results in suffering. So at that point, when such attachment arises, there is need to transform or change that state of mind as well. So as we can see, one needs to transform either of these states of mind, whether it's a question of suffering or happiness. Ultimately, what one needs to realize is sameness or equality. Generally speaking, within the Buddhist tradition, there are many levels and divisions. There, one speaks of three vehicles or yanas, one speaks of nine, and so on and so forth. There are innumerable divisions and levels. Rinpoche says that one may say that all these aim at enabling practitioners to come to a realization of sameness or equality. In brief, the object of purification is, as we have seen, these adventitious stains that obscures the true nature of mind. And as Rinpoche said, if one has an understanding of that these stains have no reality, that they are not real and solid, then this process of purification becomes very easy. Rinpoche started out asking everyone to engender the awakening mind, bodhicitta, towards the end of attaining Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. So, therefore, when he says that the teaching was a brief explanation of that statement or that request, he wanted to explain what Buddhahood is, since that is what one desires to accomplish or attain. And he also wanted to give the reason for it being possible to attain Buddhahood. So if you have any questions, you can ask them now. Yes?
Just an example of how one should view the dream, mm-hmm. in this waking dream.
During the day, you mean? The waking period. In terms of the Vajrayana, there are very profound practices by means of which one is enabled to develop a realization of the illusion-like and dream-like nature of existence. In that respect, or in that context, there are particularly two practices. It is the dream yoga and the yoga of illusory body or illusory form,
which are very profound methods for develop such a realization.
Then Sangaj Lokya Mulanda Julujinami this Mulanda Julujina Junyas Lemba Latin Zenyi Tipu Lokya Yuma Mulanda Vihipate Kartimula.
So in terms of these practices, it's very important to have a foundation with respect to these teachings in relation to the sutra tradition. Having such an understanding, namely an understanding of the illusion-like and dream-like nature of phenomena or existence, such an understanding will facilitate the practices mentioned. So now we will meditate a bit.